You would turn in your New Testaments to John chapter 17. John chapter 17. I'll be reading verses 13 through 21. John 17, verses 13 through 21. But now I come to thee, and these things I speak in the world, that they may have my joy made full in themselves. I have given them thy word, and the world hated them, because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. I pray not that thou shouldest take them from the world, but that thou shouldest keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. Sanctify them in the truth. Thy word is truth. As thou didst send me into the world, even so sent I them into the world. And for their sakes I sanctify myself, that they themselves also may be sanctified in truth. Neither for these only do I pray, but for them also that believe on me through their word, that they may all be one, even as thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, that they also may be in us, that the world may believe that thou didst send me. John 17, 13 through 21.
I suppose if I were to talk or take a poll, I guess, of individuals that are parents here, that probably you would agree almost to a person that the hardest thing about being a parent is the requirement for consistency. And that is, you tell a child that something needs to be done, you have to follow through with that. You tell a child that they cannot do something. You tell a child they're not allowed to do something, such as 2-year-old Johnny is over there playing with the electrical gizmos there in the living room. No, Johnny, you can't play with that. And that Johnny keeps playing with it, and now you have to get up and you're going to have to address the situation. That takes some effort. And that's just a characteristic that we have as parents, because we say no and we've got to follow through with it. Long time ago, back before I was married, and I was in the Air Force, I went over to someone's house. It's a married couple. I have no idea why I remember their names. Henry and Linda McBroom. And they had two boys. One was 5 years old and the other one was two. And I was over there visiting. And the boys, being as boys were, got into a bit of a scuffle. Maybe both wanted to play with the same toy. And so they began to make a ruckus. And their dad said, "Go to your rooms, both of you." And each had their own room. A 2-year-old was really smart. In fact, Henry used to tell me, the 2-year-old used to beat up on the 5-year-old. So we went along talking, and it wasn't but a couple of minutes, and I looked up, and here's this 2-year-old, and he's right there at the door of his room. And he's watching us to see exactly what's going on. And he keeps moving, and then his hit the wall between his room and his brother's room, which is right here. And he kept watching, and he kept moving over a little bit, take a little step. And pretty soon, boom, he goes into his brother's room. Now, they played fine. But the point was this. That 2-year-old knew Dad really didn't mean everything he said. Sometimes Dad would say to do something or not to do something, and he didn't really mean it. What Dad didn't realize was he was making himself out to be a liar. And that's just a characteristic that we have wind up with as parents, trying to be consistent to avoid, is that of being a liar. Let's take that and set that aside for a moment. Consider something else. One of the characteristics of man is that whatever it is that he worships, he attributes to those things that he worships the same characteristics that the man has. We see this throughout history. You see that, for instance, you go back to 1 Kings chapter 20. Ahab was king of Israel, the northern kingdom, and he suddenly had an Assyrian problem. Ben-Hadad decides he's going to come down and he's going to attack Samaria. He sends a message saying, hey, your best wives, your children, all your gold and silver, they're mine. And at first Ahab says, yeah, okay, that's fine. And then Ben-Hadad says, well, I'm going to want more. And that's when Ahab begins to say, I'm not going to put up with this. So he decides to put up resistance. They defeat the Assyrians. And it was a lopsided battle. Prophet that counseled Ahab told him, you're a small number, and there are a lot of them, but you're going to see the hand of the Lord here. And so he defeats them. As a result of that defeat, the Assyrians decide, well, we understand what's going on here. Their gods are gods of the hills. Let's engage them on the plain, and then their gods won't have the power. In other words, their gods are limited by distance or territory like we are as men. And that's the same thing you see frequently throughout the Old Testament, where men will try and take their own personal attributes and project them on to God. We see it in other instances. For instance, not to attack them in any way, but one of the things about the Catholic Church is they will worship, they will pray to Mary. And I was talking to someone about this one time, and they explained to me, well, listen, here's why we do this. If your mother came to you and made a request, wouldn't you give her more attention than some other woman necessarily? Do you see what that does to Jesus? It brings him down to the level of a human. And it says that Jesus can be made to have an undue influence on him because of the fact that his own earthly mother decides that she's going to make an appeal to him. If you look at all of the Greek gods and the Roman gods, same thing. They have human weaknesses among them. Now let's take these two points and let's join them together. The fact that what we have a tendency to do as parents is to say things and not really mean them, we have a tendency to project that onto God. Frequently we read things in the Bible and we say, we don't really think it out loud, but we wind up saying, well, I'm not so sure God really meant that. We want to look at three examples here this evening, and then we're going to look at some scriptures, trying to get through them here in just a few minutes, and we're going to race through them. Hopefully, like me, your toes are going to be stepped on. Mine were in preparing this lesson. We go back to the Garden of Eden, and we look at what God said there in Genesis chapter 2. Told mankind, but the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat of it you shall surely die. Well, we read the account back there. First Eve and then Adam ate of the fruit. And now what you have is God's going to have to make good on His word. Did He make good on His word? Well, the answer is yes. The Lord God sent them out from the Garden of Eden to work the ground from which He was taken. We ask the question, did God really mean it? Well, the answer is absolutely. Another quick example. We look at in the Old Testament, the Mosaic Law. God gave in the Ten Commandments the command to honor your father and your mother in Exodus chapter 20 and in verse 12. And then we get to the day of Jesus, and when Jesus deals with, in teaching his teachings there, he then, in Matthew chapter 15, points out the fact that you have in effect nullified this commandment in Exodus chapter 20 and in what we would find in Exodus chapter 20 in verse 12. And how was it that he described the individuals? He said, "You hypocrites," there in Matthew chapter 15 and in verse 7. Did God really mean this commandment? Absolutely. Without a doubt. He meant it. Another example, one we're all very familiar with. Samuel goes to King Saul and he says, "Look, here's the commandment of God. Go and strike Amalek and devote to destruction all that they have." Well, Saul goes, but he doesn't destroy everything. He brings the best of the animals back, and he also brings back the king of the Amalekites. And the response of Samuel then was to say, "Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord?" There in 1 Samuel chapter 15 and verse 19. We ask the question then, did God really mean what he told King Saul? And the answer is every word. So God, when we look in the scriptures, we find instances where time after time after time, God gives a commandment, he means it. Let's look at some passages here. We'll try and race through them as quickly as we can. In 1 Peter chapter 2, James, I'm so glad you picked this song out, that song out that you led. It worked so well with this. I couldn't have asked a better song for this particular point. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 11. "Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh which wage war against your soul." Now, we're going to ask ourselves the question, did God really mean this? But I want to focus not on the latter part. I want to rather keep this on a higher level and talk about the fact that God is calling us sojourners and exiles. And as a result of the fact that we are sojourners and exiles, then obviously, then we are abstained from the passions of the flesh. But this expression is explained even better in Hebrews chapter 11. In talking about all of these individuals prior to Abraham, we have a nice Polaroid here of Abraham in his four-bedroom houses that he lived in. There. Obviously, as a sojourner, he did not have them. Instead, he was living in tents. Hebrews chapter 11 says, "These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland." What's the writer there saying? For people who talk like this, that they are strangers and exiles on the earth, they make it clear they're seeking a homeland. Are you seeking a homeland? So many of us, I think, instead are very happy to homestead here on this earth and make themselves so comfortable, just like the rest of the world, as if this was all there were to it. And what we find as a result then is that so often brethren are more interested in padding their retirement account than in perhaps helping a brother. Or they really need that second house, but they don't need to help spread the gospel. Or they prefer to spend social time with their cool worldly friends, but not with embarrassing or boring brothers or sisters. Or perhaps they're more focused on their hobby than the Bible. The first two, someone might say, I've never had any kind of an issue with that. We're not talking about the fact that you may have had instances. What's your focus? If you had a brother suddenly thrust into dire financial circumstances, are you prepared both financially and mentally to be able to help that brother? Or instead, when an appeal goes out, you're thinking, oh, I don't have any money. I don't have any money. And I'll tell you something that goes right along with this, and I will put myself up as Exhibit A. Young people, you get yourself strapped with all kinds of debt. You find yourself unable to help brothers when they're in need. I find that to be one of the most compelling arguments against loading yourself up on all kinds of financial debt. They really need that. You know, it might not be a second home. It might be a boat, a trailer. It might be something else. And someone says, well, but I put money in the contribution. Let me tell you something. I can guarantee you, I haven't asked, but I know from my personal experience, every month, Nikki and Chris get requests for good, sound men to help them in spreading the gospel. It's heartbreaking to get these requests and there's not a thing you can do. If you're really looking to be able to help, I'm sure, just individually, spread the gospel, you can contact them, and I'm sure they can give you the names of someone that you yourself can send money to support. More focused on their hobby than on the Bible. Mickey touched on this morning. Someone says, oh, I don't really have a hobby. What do you do with your time when you're not eating, you're not sleeping, when you're not working or going to school? What do you do with your time? Well, I kind of watch TV. There's a hobby. Or I really like the movies. There's another hobby. It doesn't have to be anything. And let me anything that people typically term hobbies. And let me point out one other thing here before we leave this. Keep this on balance. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not suggesting hobbies are inappropriate for Christians. I'm not suggesting Christians ought to be good stewards of their money and prepare for retirement or to prepare for any kind of contingencies to put money away. I'm not suggesting that it is wrong for them to have a boat or to have a trailer. But sometimes what we do is we decide we really have to have everything else that the neighbors have. We call it keeping up with the Joneses. And we wind up making that our focus and making that a huge factor in our life. Did God really mean it? Another point we're going to make, Jesus in Luke chapter 14 makes a very challenging statement here. Verse 33, Jesus said, so therefore, he's concluding their speech that he has made, a lesson he's delivered. Any one of you who does not renounce all that he has cannot be not my disciple. Now, we can read that and we can talk about that in terms of things financially. We've pretty well dealt with that in the previous slide. I want to talk about this from another aspect, and that would be from the passage that was read by James as the scripture reading for here. For the lesson. If you go back to verse 26, Jesus made the statement, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And I think that what Jesus is talking about here is instead a love for the truth. Now, before I go any further, I want to make a point here. And I want to note what Jesus is not saying. Jesus didn't say here that if you don't renounce all that you have, that you'll be a poor disciple. Jesus didn't say, if you don't renounce all that you have, you'll be a mediocre disciple. What Jesus said is, if you don't renounce all that you have, you can't be His disciple. Somebody says, Randy, that's hard. Well, that's the point he's trying to make here. When we obey our Lord in baptism and we crucify ourselves, we drag that old person kicking and screaming to the cross. It's not going to go easily. We need to realize so often that it is so important that the pursuit of truth requires sometimes some pain. You may have to sacrifice family members. I know of a man whose entire family was Catholic, and I may be speaking to individuals here in the same boat, or they know of someone like this. His family cut him off. He's now an elder in the church. He refers to the church as his family. It is difficult sometimes for us but we look at individuals like that and we say, okay, I understand that. What if the problem in the pursuit of truth means that someone you love is really close to you, doesn't hold fast to the truth, and you have to part ways? In class this morning, Mickey was talking about hearing about good things and bad things. After Becky and I left North Alabama, we heard both good and bad of the congregation we used to live with or worship with. They went through some difficult times. And they essentially had a split. Usually, in those most instances like that, the sound individuals will have to be forced into leaving. In this case, those who didn't adhere to the truth left. We were surprised to hear of some that stayed. We would not have figured that those individuals would have stayed. We were also very sorrowful to hear of one individual that did leave. He left because his son also left. And he and his wife decided to follow him. And I truly had to ask myself when I heard that, how many times had he heard this, either in class or in a pulpit? And did it not register with him that Jesus meant what he said? You have to love him more than family members and even yourself. Some individuals have troubles giving up whatever prestige they may have. Because if they acknowledge that, oh, well, I've been wrong on this for so many years, that I wind up, it's going to cost me so much personally, either in prestige or to admit that I'm wrong. Some individuals have difficulty doing just that. Did God really mean it about the judgment? In Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27, it's appointed for man to die once, and after that comes judgment. Do you believe God really meant that? Or maybe somehow you're going to get out of the judgment. What we read throughout the scriptures is the fact that every thought, every word, and every deed is going to be judged. I don't know how God's going to do it. I don't know how God's going to be able to call up everything that's ever happened, everything I've ever thought. But He's going to do it. I don't have to know how he's going to do it. I just know he's going to do it. And related to this is the concept of hell. Do you really think hell's going to be all that bad? Sometimes we act like, well, sin's not that big of a deal. And I wind up and I think, okay, I have heard of people that say, well, I'd rather suffer in hell than to have to give up whatever I have to here in this world. You don't know what you're saying. Jesus has made it clear, it is not going to be pleasant. It is not going to be very tolerable. What about heaven? Do we really believe God when he's talking about how wonderful it is in Revelation chapter 21? Or do we think, well, okay. Sort of like the preacher that was preaching a sermon on heaven and was talking about how wonderful it was and finally got down to the end. He says, how many want to go? And everybody's hand went up except for two young men back in the back. And he said, what about you? Don't you want to go? He said, oh yeah, we want to go. But the way you were talking, you're getting a busload up right now. We're not so sure about that. So often that's the way we sometimes approach what God says about heaven. The Apostle Paul said, if I could, I'd go to heaven right now. But it's better for me to stay here for your benefit. Did God really mean it? About baptism. Jesus said in Mark 16:16, he that believes and has been baptized shall be saved. Jesus really mean that? There are some people, and I'm sure all of us have friends that would say this, well, okay, maybe he really didn't mean that. He was just, he's fudging a little bit. Or we read in Galatians chapter 3 and verse 27, how do you get into Christ? You're baptized into Christ. Or 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 21, baptism now saves you. Did God really mean all that when he said it? So many of us look at this and we say, oh, well, you know, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. Finally, I think on a more pleasant note, did God really mean it in Romans chapter 8 and verse 15? You did not receive the spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption as sons by whom we cry, Abba Father. What's this verse saying? It's saying that when you mess up, you're a son. If you mess up as a slave, what do you expect? A beating. You expect punishment. What does the son get when they mess up? Oh, okay, alright, I know you meant well, it's alright, you'll do better next time. Typically, that's the way it works. We get understanding from the father if we're sons. As a slave, all we can expect is punishment. It's very, very analogous to a parable we're all very familiar with, prodigal son. How did the father respond? He didn't even let the son finish what he had to say. He was so happy to see his son return. It's the same circumstances we can expect. Do we really believe that? Do we really feel like, oh, okay, being a Christian is such hard work? And somebody said, Randy, wait a minute. You just, 3 slides ago, you talked about how hard it is to turn everything over to Jesus. What we're talking about is something completely different. You want to go out and serve the world. You want to serve Satan. You'll find out what hard is. Jesus clearly indicated in Matthew 11:29-30, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. What God's looking for, we find in Psalm 51, verse 17, A broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise. We're honestly trying to serve God, and we mess up. What we can expect is forgiveness, compassion from God. We serve an awesome God. We serve a God that does not have man's characteristics. He is not fickle. He does not tell you, okay, today I want you to do this, and okay, now tomorrow I want you to do this. He's constant, consistent, and he's always loving. There are no throwaway words in the Bible. There are no words in there that you can say, okay, I like this, but I don't like that. And so I'm just going to just ignore that. God meant every word he has ever said. Finally, our attitude towards the Bible, you know, it's really the same attitude we have towards God. You don't really believe the Bible, you don't really believe God. It's that simple. And for us to not believe God, who's telling us exactly the way things are, we put our own souls in peril for eternity. There will be no second chances. That's it. And we want to close here this evening and offer and extend the invitation. It may be that there is someone here and they have truly begun to see the futility of living by the world's standards. That they've begun to see just how empty and hollow it is to try and live up to the world's expectations. And they've been thinking about the fact they need to become a Christian. Or perhaps someone's here and they long for that position that we talked about a few moments ago of having a father that is loving and is understanding and is forgiving for when they do mess up, and they want to return to that. But you've obeyed the gospel at one point in time, but you've let the cares and the concerns of the world creep into your life, and you've drifted further and further away. And now recognize that's not the way you want to continue. You want a right relationship with God. We're going to sing a song here in just a few moments. It's based upon what we talked about, the parable of the prodigal son. If you're an individual that's been arrogant and denied, even refusing even to yield to God at all, now's an opportunity for you to take that step and be able to put yourself in a right relationship with God. Or if you've drifted away, we want to encourage you to come forward tonight. Mickey and Chris will work, will talk with you. If you need prayers, the congregation will pray with you. Whatever your needs are, we ask that you come and let us know as we stand and sing this song.